you're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Jets will keep it in, and to the top of the point here is Wheeler at the side of the net for Little, a redirect, and he thought he scored. It's waved off by the referee. Up towards center ice comes Nash, and the Rangers will skate themselves offside, and we're going to have a look at this.
We have a ball. Puck is in the net.
Delayed response. Horn goes. 2-0 Winnipeg.
And the Jets would go on to win 5-2 last night over the New York Rangers at MTS Center. Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this afternoon, TSN1290.ca. Good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And last night, gentlemen, the Winnipeg Jets, a very impressive performance against the New York Rangers team. Admittedly, a New York Rangers team that had been struggling, but so had the Jets. And they took advantage of a weakened opponent with a 5-2 victory last night at MTS Center. Brian Little getting the Jets' first two goals of the game, including that second goal, which took a video review. You know, yesterday was a performance where the Jets play at their best. They can play with every team in this league. The problem that we've seen through the first 30-some-odd games this season is that those performances are intermittent and inconsistent, but good things for the Jets last night at MTS Center.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. By the way, loving the 2 o'clock start time. I can get up a little bit later, make some coffee, make a little breakfast. But
make a little lunch, make a little brunch,
absolutely.
Make a little dinner, make a little lupper.
Yeah, I've already had a couple of meals already today so far, Drew. But no, it was an absolutely impressive performance by the Winnipeg Jets yesterday night. And you got a couple of goals from Brian Little really early in the game. But the Jets really set the tone early with the way they used their speed. And they were creating a lot more than the New York Rangers. Mm-hmm. Rich talked about this last night on the postgame podcast. The Rangers just were flat and they weren't crisp, and the Winnipeg Jets, I thought, really built off of how they played early on in the game, and they never really took the foot off of the pedal. And there was maybe one part of that game towards the end of the second period where you thought that the Rangers might get back into the game, but of course Tyler Myers scored shortly after Dan Boyle had scored on the power play. But I thought it was an overall solid game for the Jets from Connor Hellebuck out, and I thought that the defense was really good. And for example, you saw Jacob Trouba and Dustin Byfuglien, I thought, were easily the best pair on the ice, and that's no offense to Tobias Enstrom and Tyler Myers, but I just thought that Byfuglien and Trouba were excellent together, playing a lot more than they had the previous night, Richie.
Well, that's what's important. Mm-hmm. We talked about it on Wednesday or Thursdays or Tuesday.
Whatever day it was in the middle of the week.
What time is it right now?
It's 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock, okay. We talked about it on Thursday's show, and it's how do you utilize the pairings that you have? And if you're going to load up the top four, which we've talked about being something to consider for a long time, then you have to play the best players more than you're playing the bottom pairing. And they did that last night. You know, mm-hmm. Byfuglien and Trouba played a ton. Enstrom and Myers played quite a bit as well. And then Stewart and Sherrod were relegated to less time and, of course, were the only pair scored on an even strength. So think about that, right? So that's something that just think about how well, obviously, your top four played, considering that even strength. And in reality, if you watch that whole game, the Jets should have won 8-2.
Sure. Henrik Lundqvist, I mean, how many grade A scoring chances did he rob the Jets on? You know, even while giving up, you know, four goals in the empty netter as the fifth. But I mean,
for sure.
the save on Matthew Perreault.
Oh, and Scheifele.
The
breakaway. I mean, it could have been, and Scheifele came down with speed a couple times. But
Tyler Myers rang one off the post in the third
period. It could
period.
Have been 8-2. And it should have been 8-2. The Jets dominated the game. Rangers couldn't make a pass. I mean, the Rangers could not make a direct pass yesterday if you watch the whole game. And so that was a combination of the Jets playing really well and the Rangers playing exceptionally poorly. And when you have those two things, you have an outcome like you did yesterday. But there's a lot of good things for the Jets to build on last night. You know, I thought that fourth line overall was able to play respectable hockey. I thought that Hellebuck, they protected him like they did the first few games when he played. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of good things, and of course the top line getting going, and that's only a matter of time. You know, we talked about the pressure on the top two lines so much with the depth being such an issue. if they struggle for a period of time, they're always going to get on the board. And Wheeler, Little, and Ladd, and we'll talk about the penalties later, but Wheeler, Little, and Ladd for the first two periods, and then I guess the last shift there in the empty netter were dynamic. And I think you could argue between Little and Wheeler who was the best player on the ice last night, but you could argue both ways.
Well, when your top line combines for 9 points, good things are going to happen for your team on the scoreboard for the most part. And I mean, that's what you saw. We'd seen, you know, Perreault, Scheifele, and Stafford sort of breaking out with those big multi-point games in a chunk. It had been a while since the top line did it, so it was nice to see him do that yesterday against the Rangers, against a good defense. I mean, it's not the, you know, this isn't, you know, playing against a bottom you know, dwelling team and their poor defense. The Rangers have a defense that is an envy of a lot of teams throughout the NHL.
Yeah. Right, and you have to give credit to the Ladd Little Wheeler line. You mentioned the Ladd Little Wheeler line had 9 points, and on the first couple of goals, both Staal and McDonough were on the ice against the Derek Brassard, Rick Nash, Matt Zuccarello line. And I just thought that they were kind of slow in coverage. And I thought, especially on the first goal, you could see Derek Brassard almost was already turning up the ice thinking that they were going to break out. And he just kind of let Brian Little go to the front of the net. And, you know, Brian Little, good on him. And he makes a really nice move and kind of outweights Henrik Lundqvist. But, you know, back to Richie's point, Connor Hellebuyck, I thought, didn't need to be excellent, but he was very solid. And I think one of the examples of that was when Matt Zuccarello kind of had that all-alone chance, and he kind of just stood and looked big in net and made a solid save. You know, he still made 26 saves, and you got to give him credit. They played really well in front of him defensively. But, you know, you talk about the Scheifele-Stafford-Perreault line. They were also very good, had lots of chances. You mentioned the Scheifele breakaway. He had another chance all alone in the third period. Unfortunately, didn't score. But it was an overall team effort, and you can tell that the Jets had the legs. You could tell that the Jets had the legs early on in that game, and the Rangers just didn't. And they really needed that win because, as we talked about on Thursday, and by the way, I predicted there would be a lot of goals in this game. If you go back and listen on Thursday, I predicted the Jets would get a lot of goals, just saying that I told you so. But
well, there's one out of, what, 12 this year, 14?
Yeah, like, you know, I'm batting about 25.
Less than 100. Yeah,
25%.
You're well below the Mendoza line.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a little bit worse than Mendoza. But no, it was a team effort, and it was a complete team effort, and, you know, it sets the tone nicely, I think, for the upcoming back-to-back games on the road, because the Jets didn't get any points in that St. Louis game, and you really thought they deserved a point the way they played. At least I thought that they deserved a point in that game. I didn't think that they necessarily were you know, deserving of that loss. Obviously, they blew the lead with giving up the power play goals and all that, but, you know, the Jets showed, and they've beat the Rangers twice now, and the Rangers, you know, we haven't talked about it a lot, but the Rangers are going through a big time losing streak on the road right now. They've lost their last seven road games, or I should say they're winless in their last seven road games, Drew. They've been excellent at MSG, but on the road, they're a mess right now, and they're still second in the Metropolitan behind Washington, but they've lost a lot of ground, and other teams have picked up some points on them, so, you know, they're not looking as good as they were certainly at the beginning of the season.
That's certainly the case, and the Jets took advantage of a team on the second half of a back-to-back where they team without a lot of confidence on the road, to your point there, Ezzy. They went into Minnesota the night before and got shellacked by the Wild, and the Jets said, well, why not us as well? And they were able to jump on them nice and early with the two little goals within the first 7.5 minutes of the game, and you sort of got the feeling that the tone was set. And just as impressive to me from my perspective is every time the Rangers sort of counterpunched or punched back, the Jets immediately counterpunched. JT Miller scores sort of the garbage goal mouth scramble goal. Bufflin scores 3 minutes later. Dan Boyle makes it a one-goal game again. Tyler Myers scores 2 minutes later. So it's that kind of resiliency that you didn't see against the St. Louis Blues on Tuesday night, where the Jets gave up the two-goal lead, that obviously they were, I don't know, it's not a matter of being more committed to it, but they were able to, they weren't going to let the Rangers back into the game more than, you know, coming within one goal.
And Richie mentioned this in the post-game podcast as well. Aside from the Dan Boyle goal, all goals were scored at 5-on-5. And this game was won at 5-on-5. The Jets outplayed the Rangers 5-on-5. And you really had a solid effort from many different lines. And, you know, Richie mentioned the fourth line too. You saw Halaschuk and Armia get a couple of chances there in the first period, and I thought they brought a little bit more energy than the fourth line has brought. And you mentioned the faceoffs,
I don't know
too.
It's energy, just skill, I think, you know.
Skill, yeah. And I mean, to your point, go ahead, Richie.
Well, Army had those two turnovers as he in his own zone. I think it was in the first or second period, and you thought, okay, he's going to lose confidence. But overall, they did bring energy. I don't disagree with that at all. It's just they're able to kind of make more plays than you had with the group before.
Yeah, I think, and that's probably why Paul Maurice decided to go with Halaschuk and Armia as opposed to maybe leaving Peluso in. The Rangers aren't the most physical team. I think you saw that last night, right,
absolutely,
Richie?
Right.
I mean, sure, Tanner Glass, former member of the GST line, is in there. But aside from a few players, this is not a very physical team. They certainly don't carry an enforcer, and they haven't for some time now.
And they really miss Dan Girardi.
They do. And, you know, they didn't have Girardi. They didn't have Kevin Klein, Drew. Mm-hmm. And I thought Derek Stepan really struggled in his first game back. He wasn't effective. He was not very noticeable. And it's a tough situation, guys, right, to come in on the road, second game of a back-to-back. We know Derek Stepan is, you know, an elite center in the NHL. He's a great player. And he's one of the reasons why the Rangers have been so successful in both the regular season and the playoffs. But I didn't think he was very effective. And I think aside from the Nash line, they didn't have a lot going offensively. So you got to give the Jets credit. They've beat a really good Eastern Conference team now twice, and I think the Jets have always seemed to do well, especially over the last two or three years against the Rangers. Just seem to match up well for whatever reason, even with King Henrik in net. But you got to give them credit, and I think it really, you know, Dave Minuk talked about this too. It kind of gets them feeling good in the dressing room again after a really tough, kind of disheartening loss against the Blues.
Yeah, absolutely. They obviously are in action again on Monday and Tuesday with the back-to-back in Alberta against the Oilers and the Flames. We'll talk about that later on in the program. Both those teams are going well. But, you know, to your point about the time on ice last night, Richard, just in case people, you know, you mentioned that they really loaded up on the top four. Byfuglien played 27 minutes and 15 seconds of time on ice last night. Trouba, 26 minutes. And then Enstrom and Myers, respectively, Enstrom at 17:35 and Myers at 20:52. And that's what you said. That's what we spoke about on Thursday. Play your top four, then your bottom two don't have to play nearly as much. Even Stewart still got 13 minutes and 55 seconds of ice time. Sherratt bringing up the rear at 10:46. But that's what you like to see. If you're going to load up the top four, play the top four a whole bunch, and they really rewarded Paul Maurice last night with their performance.
Especially at even strength, right? We talked about that, the fact that Mark Stewart played more even strength time than Trouba did last game. Yeah. The game before last, excuse me. And that just can't happen. Oh. And I like the way that they utilized the defense pairings last night.
Yeah, well, I mean, you noticed the D pairings. You noticed Jacob Trouba last night. And you noticed him against St. Louis, but it was in sort of fewer minutes. But, you know, this is a guy who can play 26 minutes a game. Him and Byfuglien, they can do this easily. And so now you got to see Paul Maurice loading up on them as they go forward here.
You know, we talked about it on Thursday. These D pairings are going to stay together, surely, the two games coming up in Alberta. And if they play like they did last night against, even though this Rangers team is struggling, it's still a good Rangers team. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't expect that to change, probably Steve Stewart and Sherratt. And unless there's something unforeseen coming up here on this two-game road trip, you know, Adam Pardy and Paul Postma probably aren't going to get into the lineup right now with the way they're playing. But, you know, it's a good rebound performance from the St. Louis game.
There's two problems. One is that if it does end up being a successful pairing, it took them 30 games to get to it. You could argue more than that because of the past seasons. Mm-hmm. And your other problem is that you got to deal with Byfuglien. So the question is, how long do these actually stay together?
And Richie, you probably don't see Byfuglien play 27 minutes a lot. He's usually around 21, 22, 23. And I think that was because of the score of the game and what was happening. And, you know, he's out there more on the power play, and he got the big goal, obviously. But you know that Jacob Trouba, especially, is the key there. He can play 23, 24, 26 minutes. And I think that's what they're expecting. And that's why I think you should expect those pairings to stay together, at least for the short term.
Yeah, and if you, my anticipation is you'll see Jacob Trouba even take another step forward back to maybe where he was in the middle of last year if he gets more minutes into the game this season. I thought part of his struggles have been he hasn't been able to get a feel for the game playing lesser minutes than the other defensemen.
Well, I'm playing with Mark Stewart.
That too. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to take care of some housekeeping business. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. While last night was a good performance for the Winnipeg Jets, there was a bit of controversy to come out of it as a result of Andrew Ladd taking a undisciplined unsportsmanlike conduct penalty late in the third period, or at the 12:46 mark of the third period. The Rangers capitalizing on that penalty with Dan Boyle's power play goal that made it a 3-2 game. Didn't get any closer than that, which is fortunate for the Winnipeg Jets, because had that ended, like, had the Rangers come back and that penalty been the catalyst to getting them back in the game, I think you would have seen a lot more controversy surrounding it. That being said, still some...
You think?
Yeah, I do think. Here's Jets head coach Paul Maurice last night after the game, after, you know, discussing and, you know, discussing his decision to move Andrew Ladd off the top line for a large part of the third period and putting him on the third line and switching him with Chris Thorburn.
What was the rationale between flip-flopping Ladd and Thorburn for much of the third?
Just some housekeeping.
Discipline-related housekeeping? Or?
Yeah, that's the word I'm using. Sticking to it, too. That's all you're getting.
Discipline-related housekeeping. About time for the Winnipeg Jets that Paul Maurice sort of, you know, puts his foot down and says enough is enough on the undisciplined, stupid penalties?
Well, I'll go first because I do the most housekeeping of any member of Legal Curve. So, I mean, let's
be
honest.
Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty sure that's not the case.
Yeah.
I can use a vacuum.
I'm not so sure about that.
Let's have to learn. You probably think you wallow in your own filth more than anything.
I mean, Andrew Ladd has had trouble taking minor penalties. We went over this. Richie wrote an article about it last year.
Years ago now.
Or a couple years ago. And you have a situation here. By the way, that unsportsmanlike penalty, I was up in the seats yesterday with my sister, actually, not in the press box as usual. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. Apparently, it actually wasn't something he said to the ref. Apparently, he was a slash.
Yeah, it was a retaliatory penalty, but apparently...
Right,
yeah,
he might have said something too, but anyways, I didn't see it, and regardless of what it was... Chris Thorburn was up on the first line in the third period, and Andrew Ladd, as Richie mentioned, was demoted to the third line there. And I mean, people are going to be talking about this for days, especially leading up to the game on Monday against the Oilers. But if you're going to demote someone for taking a penalty, you got to do it for even the captain, right? So I think this really is something, and they're not going to say much. Andrew Ladd also gave a pretty short answer after the game and said it was really between him and the coach. But I mean, Maurice wasn't happy with the penalties he took, Rich, and they could have easily lost that game. When you're talking about the Rangers, they've got a pretty darn good power play, so that could have easily cost them the game. So I mean, you saw Andrew Ladd score the empty net goal, and I don't think there's going to be any negative carryover. I think the big thing is whether Andrew Ladd's going to sign a contract extension with the Jets, Rich. I don't think that there's any beef between Ladd and Maurice. I think this was something that was in-game, it was dealt with, and I think they're going to move on.
Yeah, you think so. It just seems there's a lot of moving parts here. I mean, the contract stuff comes out. I can't see Andrew Ladd being happy that that was out in the public. Does it affect the team? I don't know. We talked about that on Thursday, but I don't think it would just be nothing. I mean, obviously, he'd have to speak to his agent about that and different things, and then he comes into this game. I didn't see the second penalty. I'm still kind of unsure of what it was, but the neutral zone tripping penalty on Nash, you want to avoid that. You know, and you got defenders behind you, and you got support.
You're talking about the first penalty in the first period.
The first penalty. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I can understand what they're trying to do, but I can also understand kind of Andrew Ladd being unhappy in general about the kind of the way the week has gone. It doesn't mean that he doesn't bear responsibility for his actions. I mean that more so for the play rather than the negotiation and Tim Campbell's report. But, you know... The question I have, and it's kind of similar, it's a rhetorical question I have, and kind of similar to what we were talking about with the defenseman. Did he wait too long? When we were 30 games into the season, the Jets are on pace for, what, 82 points?
Yeah.
Clearly an insufficient amount to make the playoffs. And they've had a discipline problem for the entire, close to the first half of the year now.
And last year, too.
Yeah, well, exactly. So if you don't get after it early, did you let it wait too long? And maybe if you curb it now... certainly helps you, and they're not out of it, but they need to put wins together and play like they did yesterday. But I just wonder kind of about the timing. I don't mind it in theory. I mean, you have to hold players accountable. Mm-hmm. I get that.
Well, hang on. Let me interrupt you for a second. On Thursday, I asked you if you thought that Adam Lowry's demotion was related to the penalty he took against St. Louis.
I didn't think so. I mean, I thought that would be a very rash move. I mean, if he had 5 goals or 10 goals, there's no chance a bad penalty would ever ended up in the minors.
Right.
So let's be clear there.
Sure. I mean, it certainly, yeah. If you've been playing well, you accept a bad penalty.
That might have been the straw that broke the camel's back, but it certainly wasn't the only reason that Adam Lowry was sent down. And for anybody that thinks this is somehow a unique situation, in Columbus this year, you've seen John Tortorella put Scott Hartnell in the press box. You've seen him put Ryan Johansson in the press box. We'll talk to Aaron Portsline a little bit later about that, Columbus Dispatch reporter about that. But
if
it's not something
to Columbus, you're really in trouble.
Well, I'm not just comparing it to Columbus. I'm comparing it to any level of hockey where you bench a player or demote a player if you don't think that he's playing well. And just because he's the captain doesn't mean he's immune to the wrath of Paul Maurice.
Well, here's Brian Little earlier today after Jets practice speaking about the decision to switch Thorburn and Ladd during last night's game.
I think it just shows that, he'll do that to anyone. I mean, it's whether it's Ladd or me or, a rookie. I mean, if you're going to take penalties like that, you're going to pay the price. And I think he referred to it as housekeeping last night, so I won't say much more than that.
Drew, is that your playlist in the background?
That was my playlist in the background. Yeah, it's they asked me for it, so I sent it over to them.
Yeah, you listen to the next episode by Dr.
Right.
Dre all the time.
All the time,
right?
I'm a huge rap guy. Yeah. So that's Brian Little talking about the decision, and I mean, so it doesn't sound like there's going to be many ramifications, but it's sort of it's not a great week, I would say, between Jets management and coaching staff and their captain, Andrew Ladd. Really started poorly with the contract leak, and it ended poorly with last night.
Well, you don't know that's from Jets management.
No, of course you don't. I'm just saying, but I mean, I think Ladd figures it's from Jets management, not his own agent. But regardless, it is sort of a lot more drama surrounding the Jets captain that usually there isn't a lot of drama surrounding Andrew Ladd.
Okay, let's look at the context of it. Okay, so does that happen if they're down a goal or tied 3-3 after the second? I'm asking.
What happen?
Do they switch the lines?
I think, Richie, the likelihood of that happening is diminished if they're certainly behind or tied. It's tough to say, right? I think
if he does it. If the game's tied or the Jets are losing, it sends even a bigger message.
And the Jets were up 2 goals. They weren't just up 1 goal. They, right, Richie? They were up 2 goals at that point when they decided to demote Ladd. Well, so I would say no, they probably wouldn't, because then you really have a controversy. And I don't think this is a controversy. I really think this is a one-game kind of scenario.
If he puts Thorburn up there, that means it's just a message. If he puts some Ehlers up there, it means he's trying something different.
Yeah, Thorburn, you're right. If it was Ehlers, it's a skill-for-skill move. You want to see if you can get a guy going.
Hey, that was a record-breaking night for Thorpes.
And congratulations to him. He deserves all the credit in the world for being able to be an NHL survivor to that effect. And, full praise to him. But it also says, Thorburn is, to some degree, he's a leader on this team as well.
Oh, not some degree, he's a leader.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
So I think it says something that, you're the captain. You've taken 2 penalties in this game. Both of them are stupid penalties in that, the first one's a careless stick. The second one is an undisciplined penalty. And I'm going to, put this guy, this plugger, which is what Chris Thorburn is. He's not a guy who's
for sure.
That's what he is. And so I'm going to put him up there and I'm going to send you a message. And it works. The Jets win. But it's a whole different story.
We don't know if it works yet.
Well, we don't know if it works. Fine.
We don't know if it works.
It works in the sense that it doesn't cost them last night.
Sure.
But does it change the team and their attitude and their propensity to taking penalties?
We'll see.
We'll see. We won't know that until, the rest of the season sort of unfolds, starting Monday night in Edmonton and Tuesday night in Calgary.
Right, and it certainly does send a message. I mean, I don't think that you can argue that. When you send your captain from the first line down to the third line and you promote Chris Thorburn in a game that you have to win, even though it's early on in the season. The Jets might have already been up 2 goals, but I think at the score of the game, Rich, is almost a little bit moot. It's not moot in the sense that if you need a goal and you're behind, that probably maybe doesn't happen. You could sit here and you could argue that. It's tough to know because it's subjective, right?
Right, of course.
But I think the point is that with Andrew Ladd, the leader of your team, the captain, the guy who you need to be out there with Brian Little and Blake Wheeler to kind of shut the game down, Paul Maurice is saying, I'm not happy. You shouldn't have taken those penalties. You're going to play on the third line. And Andrew Ladd did respond and get an empty net goal there. I don't. I really, Drew, don't think
playing
there's going to be a carryover.
Playing with Little
and Wheeler. A guy like Andrew Ladd, who's been in the NHL for, what, 8 or 9 years, I don't think he's going to be negatively affected by this.
Let me interrupt you there for a second, though. You know, what does it say to you that he got put back with Little and Wheeler at the end of the game when it was obvious the Jets were going to win? You know, it's 4-2 at that point in time. You know, there's a minute to go in the game.
You're entrusting your top line, and it probably says to him he's going back to that line next game.
So, I've proved my point.
It's unreal, by the way. The Blackhawks just tied the game. It's classic Blackhawks.
Yeah, down. Was that
2-2 now?
The 2-2 with a scoring with 30 seconds to go. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton will join us. Talk about the Oilers ahead of the Jets and Oilers on Monday in Edmonton. Shortly after 2:30 in the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mundell, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and your latest Winnipeg Jets news is available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from our sister station in Edmonton from TSN 1260, Dave Jamieson. Dave, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Dave. I got to say, Dave, it's probably one of the first times we've had you on that the Edmonton Oilers have been playing good hockey. I mean,
seriously, yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's strange. Last couple of games have cooled off, and, you know, for cynics and critics, they've become the Oilers that people have known for far too long. But going into this last couple of games against New York and Chicago, yeah, they were playing really good hockey.
So what do you account for? Why have they been playing such good hockey with the exception of the last two games?
Well, great goaltending from Anders Nilsson, terrific production from Taylor Hall, Leon Draisaitl, Jordan Eberle found his stride in his hands after a slow return. I mean, he missed the early part of the season with an injury. You know, they were a team playing probably above their head, and they're doing it without Connor McDavid. You know, they hit a good patch, and this isn't to say that they can't get back to some of what they were going through, but look, that's where this team is in its evolution, and you're going to have, I believe, periods like we saw, and then you're going to see you know, the kind of performance they put in against the Chicago Blackhawks. You see the gulf between where the Oilers are currently and the really good teams in the NHL, and they saw it against Chicago, less so against New York, but you know, the Rangers, they had it handed to them by the Oilers on the Glenn Sather night here in Edmonton just a few days ago, and so, you know, they weren't going to let that one go unaccounted for.
You know, Dave, you mentioned the Glenn Sather night, and I thought Leon Draisaitl was really amazing, and I think he's been an incredible story this year, as have other Oilers, but Jim Matheson of the Edmonton Journal reported today that Leon Draisaitl is going to play on a line with Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. I guess two-part question, what are you looking out of that line, and do you think that's going to stick, especially when Connor McDavid comes back? And I guess, how impressed have you been with Leon Draisaitl, because he wasn't really a part of this team early on this season?
I'll tell you what, Leon Draisaitl has proved all of us wrong, or at least the people who kept repeating the mantra that he was too slow. And, you know, we're guilty of, in the media, of a lot of things, but one of them is independent thought is sometimes not, you know, something that we do enough of, and it got repeated enough that people started to say, well, he must be too slow. Well, he's proven to be anything but. He is really creative, very smart, doesn't panic with the puck. I mean, Taylor Hall's success, and Taylor Hall is very quick to credit Leon Draisaitl with the success that Taylor Hall's having in the early part of this season. I mean, Taylor Hall's a big part of that, too. He's playing very good hockey. But, you know, when Connor McDavid comes back, I think all bets are off in terms of what the lines are going to look like. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has gone through periods of he's a quiet, good player. And he, you know, there was a period of maybe a couple of weeks ago where he was starting to get a lot of criticism for his inability to score. There are many nights when Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, he kind of vanishes. And I think, you know, fans to some degree think that a player who was drafted where he was should be more visible, more productive, and more noticeable. And that isn't his game. He's going to be probably a very subtle yet effective NHL player. So You know what? When 97 gets back out there, who knows what this team's going to look like? It'll be better. But they weren't, you know, they weren't great with Connor McDavid, and that's the, you know, that's where this team is at. He was a great story, as you would expect him to be, but they weren't winning games with him, but they were, you know, the team you wanted to watch because of him.
Dave, Todd McClellan, you know, he's getting more comfortable, you'd assume, behind the bench there in Edmonton. What changes has he made, or, you know, from your perspective in terms of maybe handling the young players or handling the pressure? And certainly, you know, coaching in Edmonton is different than coaching in San Jose.
The difference that I can see from my vantage point, Todd McClellan oozes authority, composure, his team. The Oilers, you know, they have defensive zone breakdowns. I mean, that's pretty obvious. Their defense is not nearly good enough. Oscar Klefbom is out now with a broken finger, and they miss him quite dearly. Darnell Nurse is going to be a terrific defenseman, but, I mean, he's being rushed along, and that's not, you know, and negative in the sense that, you know, they need him. Man, he's worthy of the NHL ice time. But, you know, what you notice, I notice about Todd McClellan is that this is a highly accomplished NHL coach. And I say that because Todd Nelson did a very good job prior to this in an interim basis. But Todd McClellan, I mean, he is an elite NHL coach. And you can see it in the way his team plays. I mean, the Oilers look like they have a clue now. And they didn't for the last several years. It was patchwork. You know, they tried to bring in various systems that proved to be, you know, not suitable for the kind of talent they had. And they just weren't, they just couldn't measure up on most nights. But with Todd McClellan there and the team he's brought with him, Jay Woodcroft notably from San Jose, they've got systems in place. The Oilers look like a team that has much work to do, but now they don't look nearly as bad as they once did.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Dave Jamieson. He's a host of a show on our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260. Dave, you mentioned him in passing as one of the reasons why the Oilers are playing so well. That's Anders Nielsen. Offseason, the Oilers thought they got their goaltender of the future in a trade, but they thought they got the goaltender of the future in a trade with the Rangers, that being Cam Talbot. Instead, apparently all it took was Liam Coughlin to get Anders Nielsen out of the Chicago Blackhawks organization. He's been great for the Oilers. Who is he? Where's he come from?
I was hoping you could answer that. No, he's been nothing short of a marvel. He, you know, had some time in the Islander organization. He was a Blackhawk ever so briefly, and as you say, you know, he came here for, you know, no disrespect to Liam Coughlin, but virtually nothing. And they've got a big goaltender who moves well, who went away to the KHL and really worked on his game and has come back looks like worthy of if not a full-time starter in the NHL, certainly a full-time starter in Edmonton right now, because Cam Talbot has he has stumbled in the opportunities he's been given. He's had a bit of a bounce back on this road trip, but you know, they were expecting or hoping that what they saw to Cam Talbot last year, coming on in relief when Henrik Lundqvist was injured in New York, is that he would be further along in his development as a, you know, potential starter. But it was a flyer they were taking on him. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you're playing well, but you're playing well for the New York Rangers, and they're a much better hockey team then and now than the Edmonton Oilers.
You know, Dave, we talked about Connor McDavid earlier, and it seems like, by the way, he's been out of the lineup for a year now, but the big news out of Edmonton was that he was skating yesterday.
And he had a sandwich for lunch, too.
What kind of sandwich was it, Richie? hopefully an Illegal Curve sandwich. How close is Connor McDavid to returning to the lineup, Dave?
Well, here's the thing. They are going to proceed with the utmost caution, although, you know, everyone, I'm sure, would desperately like to see him right now. And Peter Chiarelli has said as much. The fact that he's on skates and is, you know, not shooting pucks right now and is working with David Peltier, the former Olympian who is the Oilers skating coach, is a good thing.
Is Jamie Soleil out there too, Dave?
No. But David Peltier is working with him and is to get, you know, get him back on skates and get him feeling comfortable in that part of his game. And then they'll, you know, again, I think they're targeting early in the new year, but look, if the Oilers, let's say they, you know, don't stay close to the rest of the pack, and the Pacific Division being what it is this year, you know, and if they slide back a bit, you know, what is the rush to get Connor McDavid back if they're in that position? Now, there could be a lot more urgency if, you know, if the Oilers can stay close and continue to hang around, and I say this not with a smirk on my face, you know, a playoff, a potential, then, you know, they might move it up a few days. But they're this is the crown jewel. They're not going to do anything that's going to jeopardize his return at all.
Dave, Andre Sequeira got a lot of money in the offseason. You know, we talk a lot about Dustin Byfuglien here in town, and you know, I always say the amount of money that Sequeira got, you know, imagine what Byfuglien will get when there's a bunch of people after him. So how has he played in his first season in Edmonton?
Fair to middling. Early in the year, it looked like, and here's the interesting thing. I mean, Justin Schultz was injured. He has returned and is, you know, ostensibly the Oilers' power play. You know, he's the one who's supposed to drive the Oilers' power play. He has not played well. And this is, I think, what, the lockout year, and then this would maybe make it year three of Justin Schultz. They're, you know, you're into diminishing returns with him. Sekera has been, I think, thrust into a role that he might not be entirely comfortable with in terms of more power play time, but he's handling the puck better. I mean, I would give him, you know, sort of a middling review. You know, many nights he's not your best defenseman and not your worst.
Jordan Eberle, Dave, I mean, this is a guy, obviously, I mean, we know, you certainly know what he can do, and most of people have been able to watch him long enough in World Juniors and through his career in Edmonton. Is he a guy who is possibly, you know, we talked about Draisaitl earlier in the interview and McDavid coming back, and not that you can necessarily have too much talent, but is he somebody who's possibly expendable for the right piece on the back end?
Yes, and I would have said that more vigorously had he not been playing the way he has been playing recently. When you see Eberle producing the way he has, and he, you know, has a tendency to be a streaky player, everyone knows what he can do offensively, the creativity. He has, you know, historically worked well with Taylor Hall. You know, I think what everyone would like to see is a healthy Oiler lineup with McDavid in it to see what they've got. I mean, Yakupov was playing extremely well. I mean, Connor McDavid all but rescued this guy's career in Edmonton early in the season. Yakupov was, you know, really benefiting from skating alongside Connor McDavid, but Yakupov's injured, McDavid's injured, and so that, you know, early good story is no longer there. But, you know, Eberle has, you know, I think a real, you know, cachet, but I think they're reluctant to want to move that because, you know, again, Peter Chiarelli, I'm sure, and Todd McClellan, they would just want to see what this team might be able to produce when all of the key parts are there, and they haven't been.
Dave, I should mention this. I actually missed this, but a couple hours ago, Jim Matheson actually said that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle were with Pouliot on the second line, and they've kept Draisaitl, Taylor Hall, and Teddy Purcell together. So I guess we're not going to see that kind of super line together with Draisaitl up there with Nugent-Hopkins and Taylor Hall. But Neil Yakupov, we talked about Connor McDavid earlier. I guess you're not going to see him on Monday against the Winnipeg Jets, but how early is he going to be back, and what line are you expecting him to slot into when he does come back?
Well, I don't know where they're going to plug him in, and frankly, they're not in a rush to get him. Yakupov, without McDavid this season, has been really ineffective. And you know, the thing that's so confounding about Neil Yakupov is the hustle's there, the work's there, the care is there. And I've often said that it looks like he is rushing to, he doesn't quite know what he's hustling for. It's a lot of work, but not a lot of return in terms of his play some nights. And so I think that where he goes will depend, I think, largely on where the team's at right at that very moment. And I'm not sure exactly what his timeline is for return, but if it's around the time of McDavid, I mean, the obvious thing is that they would slot back in together, given what they had. But, you know, Todd McClellan is kind of a show-me phase for a lot of players. He's seen some great stuff out of Hall and Draisaitl and a few others. You know, and he said as much after the loss to Chicago as we needed better performances out of the people we count on, and they haven't had them in the last couple of games.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. It was at the beginning of December that the Oilers lost in Toronto, and after the game, there was some pointed criticism from head coach Todd McClellan. You know, a coach has the prerogative to do that. I'm going to ask you about the comments from Bob Nicholson, who said, quote, that the loss to the Leafs was rock bottom. How did those comments from a guy who's not necessarily involved day-to-day with the actual team, as opposed to the Oilers Entertainment Group organization, how did those comments go over with the players in the dressing room coming from Bob Nicholson?
Well, I don't know what the reaction might have been from inside the room. I can tell you this, though. The larger audience, and Bob Nicholson, I'm sure, was as much speaking to the long-suffering fans in Edmonton when he said that, is that there has been a feeling over the last several years, and as the Oilers have gotten progressively worse, is that the management has been previously reluctant to speak the truth. And Bob Nicholson is held in very high regard in the hockey world and in the city. And so for Bob Nicholson to lean in with a comment like that tells you that, you know, he's on it. He's going to, he has an opinion. Yes, he works for the Oiler Entertainment Group, which is the larger body of which the Oilers are part of. But he is very much, I wouldn't say that he's day-to-day hockey operations, but I'm sure if there's a key decision or an opinion needed, Peter Chiarelli and the others in the hockey management group have no problem going down the hall to see Nicholson and have no problem with his opinion. So, you know, I think it's the truth. It was rock bottom. And I don't think it's necessarily harmful. I don't think anybody in this market was, that isn't somewhere Bob Nicholson should comment. I mean, he was brought in to make change, and he was brought in to get this thing figured out. And if part of it is being, self-critical of the team, then that's part of the job.
Dave Jamieson covers the Edmonton Oilers for TSN 1260. He's host of the Dave Jamieson Show on that station as well. Dave, always appreciate your time, and thanks very much for joining us this afternoon here in Winnipeg.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Dave. It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to preview Monday in Edmonton and Tuesday in Calgary. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Dave Jamieson for joining us. In case you missed any of the interview, it's available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in that fine event coming up on June the 5th, 2016. Join IC in raising money for the Dementia and Alzheimer Wards at the Riverview Health Center by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca.
Is Chris going to be joining the team? Because producer Alex has already joined the team.
Yeah, what about producer Chris?
Are you putting Chris on the spot right now.
Yeah, are you going to join Team Illegal Curve?
I'm not necessarily a great cyclist.
You don't have to be a great cyclist.
You guys want me,
you're in.
You can have me.
There you go.
You got it.
Chris is in.
I'm in.
Chris, if anything, being a poor cyclist is actually probably a requirement for this team.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, exactly. We might not make it the entire way. We just might have to, fall off our bikes at some point in time.
Yeah.
But, raising the money is the key thing. So, Chris, you're in. Welcome to the team.
Well, with the exception of Richard Kurt Harnett Pollock.
Oh, yeah. Hasn't been on a bike in 15 years.
Jets and the Oilers on Monday, Jets and the Flames on Tuesday as they wind up the pre-Christmas season here for the Winnipeg Jets. Two big games. I mean, every game is big for the Winnipeg Jets from here on out, given their struggles so far. But from my perspective, you win Monday and Tuesday, and you would be 17-15-2, which is, in my mind, exactly a .500 winning percentage. In everybody's mind.
And you didn't even use a scientific calculator
for
that.
You didn't even use any trigonometry at all. 17-15-2 to end the pre-Christmas schedule is a lot more palatable than if you split these two or if you win or if you lose both, or obviously if you lose both. But there's something psychological in my mind if you're right at that .500 winning percentage, which is your minimum barometer that you have to be a playoff team in this day and age in the NHL.
I don't think they necessarily look at the 500 barometer, Drew. I think they look at it like they need to get points.
Sure.
Right? But I know what you're saying. It's significant in the sense that the closer you get to 500 and as you pass 500, that usually means that you're getting more points. So they're kind of tied together. But I think the point is, guys, with the two games in Alberta and then coming back home with games against the Red Wings and against the Penguins, and then you've got the Arizona Coyotes on New Year's Eve, I think they have five games left in December, right?
That's correct.
So I think that you're looking at a situation where you probably want to get at the very least points in four of those five games. It would be pretty tough to win four or five games. And hey, if the Jets can win four or five games, mm-hmm. they're going to be pretty happy. Hey, they'll probably like winning all five of those games, Drew, but considering there's a back-to-back in there, and then you're playing against a Pittsburgh team that is struggling but probably going to be fired up, and then Detroit is obviously a good team, and Arizona's on the road. So I think it's realistic, though, to expect to get points, but that's probably got to be your goal, right? Because the Jets right now are on pace for roughly, I think it's 82, 83 points, and we know that it's going to take 95-plus points, probably closer to 99 or 100, to get into the playoffs, especially in this division with Colorado now passing the Winnipeg Jets. They're only 1 point ahead, I believe, now, or they're tied. But they absolutely have to start winning, and you got to take these two games in Alberta as a starting point. And, you know, the Jets are a team right now that I still think is trying to find their A game. I think you've seen definitely positive signs. And this Calgary Flames team, guys, has quietly won, seven in a row? Seven in a row, yeah, you're right. They're playing right now, so that streak might be snapped. But the point being that they're starting to play their best hockey of the year, and that's after they lost seven of their first nine mm-hmm. games. Mm-hmm. And Kari Rammo has played excellently after being demoted to the AHL. So you got to give them credit. Anytime you can put out Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, and Yuri Hudler, you're going to have a chance to win one of the top lines in hockey, right? So it's going to be a tough game against Calgary, and even Edmonton with a couple of injuries, they're playing pretty well.
Well, this game's important also because, I mean, you know, this is wild card games here.
Yep.
I mean, because Nashville's struggling. They're 3-5-2 in their last 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
The Avs obviously are streaking. I mean, that's amazing to me that the Jets are below the Avs. But Calgary 32 points, Edmonton 30 points. You're looking at wild card talk. You know, you're not that far off. So you got to beat these teams. I mean, you're all competing for the same spots here. It's not an Eastern Conference team, you know, and you look at it, the Jets are very unlikely they're going to make a run. It's going to be for a wild card spot. It's not going to be for a top four. They're 8 points back.
Chicago winning today in Buffalo, controversial ending there with the Blackhawks down by a goal and scoring.
It wasn't really controversial.
Well, not controversial, but...
it was the right call. But the point is that this is who they're competing with. All these teams that are basically all the same are competing with each other. So against the Edmonton Oilers, you have to take advantage of their defense. You have to get the puck in deep. You have to use your speed. So what the Jets have been doing really well is been using their speed off the rush. And I think that's helped by the fact that they're playing with the top four unit now that can all move the puck. That's a big thing. They're going to play their top guys big minutes, and all those four guys can move the puck and can skate. And that's a great asset to have.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can get on the Edmonton defense quickly, and then once you get in, you can create off the rush and then possibly create sustained pressure off the cycle or whatever it may be, you're going to be in a good position. So I think the Jets are in a good spot here to beat the Edmonton Oilers. I do, and just the way they're constructed right now and the way they're playing. Now, of course, there's big guns, and you're not going to have last change. So you're playing Stewart and Sherratt, and you might insulate them a little bit more with one of those guys on the bottom pairing if you don't like the matchups. But you're gonna have some times where they're going to get Taylor Hall out against your bottom guys. And I'd be a little bit scared if I were a Jets fan. But I think overall, they're looking pretty solid.
What about the Flames on Tuesday?
Well, you know, the Flames on Tuesday, there are similarities between these squads.
The Jets and the Flames.
Yeah, there certainly are.
I mean, heavy.
You're talking about real good defenses.
Mm-hmm.
The goaltending's kind of been off and on throughout the year. Forward groups that are good but not great, not the deepest. They rely on their top guys quite a bit. So, yeah, that's one of those games where I see it being a close grind. Because, you know, you can't take advantage of the Flames as much when you're pressuring that defense. Because that defense gets the puck out quick.
So, an amazing stat, Richie. The Calgary Flames have had points from their defensemen in 17 consecutive games.
That's crazy. Wow.
No Michael Frolik for the Flames on Tuesday. How do you deploy the Jets' goaltenders? Where do you go, Hutchins? I assume you don't go Hellebuck back-to-back?
I would assume not. You've done it once before. I don't think he was the reason they lost 2-0 to Chicago, but I would go Hellebuck, Edmonton, and then Hutchinson against Calgary.
Has he?
Yeah, I would expect there to be a different goalie in Calgary, whether it's Hutchinson against Edmonton or Hutchinson against Calgary, I wouldn't expect Hellebuck to play both games. I probably agree with Rich. I think Hellebuck earned a start on Monday against Edmonton, and then you go with Hutchinson on Calgary, and then you go into the break, and then you go back with Hellebuck probably. I don't think you want to have Hutchinson not playing for too long. We've already seen him watch Hellebuck, Rich mentioned, against Chicago. So I'd expect Hutchinson to play against Calgary. And, you know, Richie talks about, how the Jets have used their speed. I mean, you're talking about a New York Rangers team, even without Dan Girardi and Kevin Klein. I mean, Mark Stahl and Ryan McDonagh is still a formidable D pairing. Mm-hmm. And they, the Ladd Little Wheeler line, absolutely tore it up against that D pairing.
Absolutely.
And sure, you know, Dylan McGrath, he's a young defenseman, and you know, he struggled a little bit. Obviously has a really bright future, of course, a hometown boy. But needless to say that the Jets really, I think, capitalized and were much more sharp against the New York Rangers than they were certainly against the St. Louis Blues early on. So, these are both winnable games, Drew. And sure, the Calgary Flames might be coming into today's game having won 7 in a row. But it's still, I think, a team that the Jets certainly have more depth up front. And maybe on defense, the Jets lose the battle a little bit there. But you certainly are going to have to play certainly well against both of these two teams. But you know, they have to go on a run. At the end of the day, the Jets have to go on a run. They have to make up ground for that poor November. And, you know, they started off yesterday with a win over the Rangers. They got to continue it in Alberta.
They started it off exactly right. They got to continue it in Alberta. The Flames down 2-0 at the end of 20 minutes to the St. Louis Blues this afternoon in St. Louis. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll start the second hour by talking about a Jets RFA that nobody else is talking about. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant, Bernstein's Deli. Has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Gentlemen, a lot of talk, tons of talk, about the free agency status of Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien. Some talk about the RFA status of Jacob Trouba. Another member of the Winnipeg Jets, a key member of the core of the Winnipeg Jets, is Mark Scheifele. He's an RFA at season's end as well, yet you don't hear pretty much any talk whatsoever about Mark Scheifele and his upcoming RFA status. Why do you think that is, to start? Why so much about, I mean, we know why about Byfuglien and Ladd, but why so much about Trouba and not anything at all about Scheifele, even though they're in the exact same position?
I'm not sure. I mean, we don't really talk about the Trouba stuff any more than Scheifele. I mean, I know it was brought up in the story,
yeah.
and that was interesting to note the number, but they're both going to be in situations where they don't have much leverage, and the team is going to retain them. And unless there's some kind of a deal, I don't think either of them are going to be offer sheeted. So I'm not sure. It's kind of just weird why one would be talked about more than the other.
I think there's a few reasons. I think it has something to do with the fact that Jacob Trouba is struggling, and I think he's less of a certainty than Mark Scheifele is. I think you know more what you have with Mark Scheifele than you do with Jacob Trouba. I think the upside of Jacob Trouba is arguably higher than the upside of Mark Scheifele, and it takes longer maybe for a defenseman to develop. But I think with Mark Scheifele, especially this year with 12 goals and 22 points, as opposed to Jacob Trouba, who certainly hasn't had the offensive totals that I think he would like or the team would like, I think that has something to do with it. But Drew, certainly Mark Scheifele should be talked about because he is a huge part of the young core of this team going forward. And I think if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you probably want to sign him to 6 to 8 years. Maybe the Scheifele camp is looking for a bridge deal that you've seen with certain other players. But I definitely think that Mark Scheifele has been more consistent of a producer, certainly this year.
Looking at the negotiations in that case, do you expect that it would be a contentious one between the Jets management and Mark Scheifele's representation?
Isn't it always?
See, I don't know. Is it? It doesn't seem. Sometimes it's worse than others. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly and Ryan Johansson, those are worse negotiations, more contentious negotiations than pretty much anything we've seen of recent mind, I think.
Mm-hmm. Drew, I think he's going to ask for big money, and they're not going to want to give him big money, and it's going to be a regular negotiation. I don't foresee. I mean, I think he's a he's well liked in the organization and in the room. He works hard. Like, that's a big thing you know about Mark Scheifele, is he works hard. He wants to get better. So I don't know if it'll be smooth, if they ever are, but I don't expect it to be overly contentious.
Is he?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Richie mentions, you know, that it seems like a lot of these contract negotiations are contentious. You think about Ryan Johansson and the time that Jarmo Kekalainen had with his agent. That wasn't very fun.
No, same agent as Jacob Trouba, should point out, Kurt Overhart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would expect both to have certain, I guess, issues that you have to deal with, because, I mean, you saw it with PK Subban. You saw how the bridge contract worked for PK Subban, and I think other agents are very aware of that. Regardless if their client is a defenseman or forward, Richie, right? But, I mean, there's no reason to believe that there's any issues and there's going to be a holdout situation. I mean,
right, yeah,
I think the Jets, and Mark Scheifele, I think, is representative of the young core of this team, because he was the first ever draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had to spend a year or two in junior after he was drafted because he wasn't ready. But since he's come into the NHL and been a full-time NHLer, I mean, his development has been incredible.
He's
and
been
I think,
really good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, he's on pace for 50, 55 points, whatever it is this year. And he's gotten better on faceoffs. Richie talked about it in the first segment, winning the faceoff back to Buff for the Jets' third goal. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, and his work ethic, you know, training with Gary Roberts in the summer, he's a great example for the young players in the organization. You know, even guys that aren't in the NHL mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's a Connor or a Roslovic or whatever. I mean, Scheifele is a guy, he's the second line center for the Jets. He could easily be the first line center for the Jets in a couple of years. You know, nothing against Brian Little, but I mean, we might see that the way he's developing offensively. So it shouldn't be contentious, Drew. And I would expect, and I'd think that the Jets would like to sign Mark Scheifele long term, because he factors in so importantly in the future.
If you're the Winnipeg Jets management, you're going to Mark Scheifele. Are you going with a long-term deal, or are you going with that bridge contract? Are you sort of giving him the options to sort of pick and choose what, you know, whatever they prefer?
I think you're preferably going long-term. If you're long-term, then you're able to spread out the dollars a little bit more favorably and hope that when he reaches his peak, he's at a pretty good cap hit, but you've paid him maybe a little bit more for the early years than you would get in arbitration or without arbitration rights, which you wouldn't have this year.
Sure.
I think that's what you're looking at for both. To be honest, with both Trouba and Scheifele, if you can sign them long-term, you try to do that.
Okay, so let's talk comparables. Let's talk comparables to begin with. Comparables to Mark Scheifele in and around the NHL. I mean, that's what the agents and the management do, is they bring, you know, comparables to the table and say, this is what we think is a fair comparable for our player.
Ezzy and I have three. You know, we haven't done a extensive analysis of this.
You always do generally in the offseason. You'll do one of your comprehensive articles.
But I haven't, so this is just kind of looking through and seeing some players. But I'm going to let Ezzy go first.
Well, I mean, a couple of guys that were drafted in and around Scheifele, and Jonathan Huberdeau was a good example for me, drafted third overall in 2011, and he was a player who signed a bridge contract mm-hmm. actually during the third year in the NHL. And another player was Nick Bjugstad, who was drafted in 2010. It was the first round, mid-first round.
Drafted 19th overall in 2012.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say 12th overall for some reason. But
both Panthers guys.
Yeah, both on the Florida Panthers, Drew. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're comparable players because not only are they centers, but I think they're drafted around the same time, and their production has been similar. I think if you look at Jonathan Huberdeau's numbers, they're very similar to Mark Scheifele's. When you're talking about Huberdeau, I believe his annual average value was $2.5 to $3 million.
$3.25 million. He signed a 2-year bridge contract right. worth $6.5 million.
Whereas Bjugstad signed a 6-year deal, which averaged, I believe, $4.1 million.
That's correct.
So I think if you're looking at kind of what the range of what Mark Scheifele could make, I think Bjugstad and Huberdeau were two guys that I found. And I mean, there are other players too. You're never going to find someone who's exactly like Mark Scheifele, mm-hmm. but I think especially when you're talking about Huberdeau, he's an offensive-minded center, and he's a playmaker, and not the most physical guy, but same draft year as Scheifele. So those were a couple of guys, and again, I didn't go through the entire league, but those were two guys that came to mind that you might want to use as comparables for Scheifele.
Well, I don't think those are bad comparables at all. I have three guys that kind of come to mind. Nick Bjugstad was one of them, so I totally agree with that one. Nick Bjugstad's long-term extension season, he had 24 goals and 43 points in 72 games. Didn't really see much time on most of his production in that final year was actually at even strength, which is a nice sign for them. So you look at that 24 goals, okay? Another one I have is Ryan Johansson. different types of players. They certainly have a different style of play. But when Ryan Johansson signed his deal, his final year, he put up big numbers, 33 goals, 30 assists, and 63 points in his final year of entry level.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up signing the deal for $4 million a year for 3 years. Okay, obviously, those contentious negotiations. And the other one is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. If you look at pre-signing the contract production, Nugent-Hopkins in his final entry-level year had 19 goals, 37 assists, 56 points in 80 games. So pacing about where Scheifele is.
Sure.
So if you're Scheifele, I think you start at least with the $6 million.
Yeah. Well, and that's where Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, yeah, he went. That's on the long-term deal. That's the longest
seven
of
years,
all those deals,
yeah,
is the 7 years,
yeah,
that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins got. Everybody else got fewer years than that. Are you comfortable paying him? I mean, you think he's going to turn into a consistent $6 million a year player?
That's a good question, Drew. He's certainly surprised me the steps he's taken as quickly as he's taken them. I look at the risk in that, and if he stays where he is now, you're not getting killed on value, and if he continues to ascend, then you're going to probably get some good value. So I'm not so sure there's a huge risk in that for the Jets. Obviously, you want to cut that down a little bit for a cap it if you can, but you're going to have a hard time doing it. So I think that's probably the ballpark if you're talking long term.
Yeah, and I think we could sit here and argue about whether or not Mark Scheifele's ceiling is a first-line center or a second-line mm-hmm. center. I think he does have the potential to be a number one center, but even if he's not a first-line center, Drew, on the Winnipeg Jets, he's mm-hmm. going to be a very good second-line center. Yeah. So I think you're looking at a guy that has 30-goal, 70-point potential, absolutely.
He's on pace for 30 goals this year.
He is, and so, I mean, even if he ends up with 25 goals and 60 points, that's going to be a good year for a guy in his third year in the NHL. So I think Mark Scheifele's development has been really something that the Jets want to use as an example for their other younger players who have been drafted over the last couple of years, especially for Nick Ehlers, who's in his first year in the NHL. Obviously came into the NHL a little bit earlier than Scheifele, but I absolutely think that Scheifele is worth signing to a six-year contract extension. It's tough to say how he's going to perform throughout the entirety if he does sign that six-year contract extension, but I think the signs are there, Drew. His development over the last couple of years, I mean, his shot is excellent. He's starting to use that shot better. He's getting better at face-offs. That physical element of the game, he's certainly not falling down. He was given a hard time for all of that. And I think last year, especially going up against Ryan Kesler, and Ryan Getzlaff in the playoffs, I think that was an indication for Mark Scheifele that he needed to get bigger and he needed to work on that element of his game, because center is the toughest position in hockey, maybe with the exception of a goaltender, but you got to cover so much of the ice. And I think Mark Scheifele, has turned into a real catalyst for this offense. I mean, Mark Scheifele and Matthew Perreault have been a staple on that second line all year, and they've been pretty consistent. Sure, they went through a bit of a lull there in November, but for the most part this season, they've been very dependable for Paul Maurice. So with Scheifele, I expect it to not be as contentious as Jacob Trouba, who might be asking for too many years than the Jets are prepared to offer.
And he's playing, equal even strength minutes to the top line. Little Adam Wheeler is playing about a minute less in the power play. And, I mean, the penalty kill is not going to have any effect in terms of offensive production, usually for contract negotiations. Certainly it talks about, how he's has different brings different assets, qualities, to the table.
Sure.
That'll play a factor. But the offensive numbers will play the biggest factor. So you take that into account, and he's going to ask for big money. So you got to pay somebody here.
Right?
You have to pay more than somebody, actually. You have to pay at least two guys, Trouba and Scheifele. And the other guys you got to make a decision on, which we've talked about.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about a guy we just mentioned. It seems like things are going from bad to worse with Ryan Johansson and the Columbus Blue Jackets. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Saturday afternoon, 6 more days until Christmas. Happy holidays from all of us at the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. This segment of the program brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
I saw the Zappias at the Jets game last night.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Did you saw say Frank hi? And Mauro? Yeah, of course.
Good. Just making sure.
Yeah, we had a little chat before the game.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, why is there a soccer ball in the studio right now?
There's also a football.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know. I think in case one of us makes a bad point, we're now going to just throw a football at each other or a soccer ball.
Chris just threw me the football. By the way, Chris has a pretty good arm.
I believe that would be a missed catch on the stat sheet.
Yes, that was definitely a dropped catch by the receiver there. Ryan Johansson, he's always had a bit of a contentious relationship with the Columbus Blue Jackets.
I think we've used the word contentious a little bit too much over the last couple segments.
Well, he has had a do you think he's had a how would you describe his relationship then?
Is that the thesaurus, Drew? Just keep going.
Okay. Anyways, Ryan Johansson has had a poor relationship with his employer, the Columbus Blue Jackets, particularly since he held out to start the season back when he was still an RFA, as you know, at the end of his entry level contract. Eventually he signs, but there was always concerns about whether or not all the water was good under the bridge between him and the Blue Jackets.
It obviously isn't between him and Torts, right, Drew? And I'll tell you this much. When Columbus came into town, a week and a half ago,
yeah,
Ryan Johansson was not good.
No, he was not. And he's playing on the wing.
He's playing on the wing.
Which doesn't make any sense.
No, because you know Richie mentioned last segment him as a comparable, Ryan Johansson, that is, for Mark Scheifele. And he had 33 goals last year. And he was someone who you're talking about as potentially being on the 2018 Canadian Olympic team, certainly the 2016 World Cup of Money team as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he's an
smooth. I like it.
He's an elite center. Well, I mean, that you coined that term, but I mean, he's an elite center, Drew. And John Tortorella's come in there, and I think he's made an example of Ryan Johansson, and he's got to be better. I mean, he hasn't been good enough this year, and he was a healthy scratch last game, but he's going to play tonight. And I think for a player who is one of the leaders of this team, even though he might only be 22 years old, he's still a leader of this team, along with others, Nick Foligno, who wears the C and everything like that. But, I mean, watching him and the way he was playing in Winnipeg, I can understand why Torts put him in the press box.
Well, yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. I don't disagree with that. I know it's a little bit an old school to throw a guy in the press box for poor performance, but you watch Johansson play and you think to yourself, okay, yeah, I agree with Ezzy there. Like, okay, yeah, he needs to take a seat. He can't be playing that way. Now, the risk here of trading him, and it appears that it's only a matter of time before he eventually is out of Columbus, the risk here of trading him is the upside. I mean, there's no question how skilled he is. He can be a dominant force, especially below the hash marks. He can create for others and create for himself. I mean, players like that do not grow on trees.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's between the ears, Richie.
That's where his problem is. And I'm not sure. I mean, it's a little bit of the Evander Kane thing. The attitude is a problem. And will that change? Like, does it change for Evander Kane going to Buffalo? Does it change for Ryan Johansson going X spot?
But here's the quote.
Because the talent is, he's more talented than Kane, and they're both very talented.
Here's the quote from Ryan Johansson after the decision to bench him. Quote, "It's been brewing for a while. Since that last game in Dallas, I made a few mistakes that we've been going over as a team, things we have to erase from our game. Full responsibility. My fault. It's the way we want to point our team in the right direction, how we want to carry ourselves as an organization, as a hockey club." I mean, he's saying all the right things after, you know, as a result of this benching. Right. But it's interesting to note that part of the reason, in addition to the poor play, there's been reports that he blew off John Tortorella during a TV timeout in that game versus Dallas, and that's why he was stapled to the bench for the third period, that Tortorella called everyone over for a TV timeout, wanted to go over a few things on the whiteboard, sure, as the coach will often do, and Johansson wanted nothing to do with it. So on the left hand, he's saying all the right things post-game, but on the right hand, he's doing all the wrong things on the ice.
I believe the saying would be talk is cheap.
Sure, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Exactly right. Talk is cheap. Here's the guys from Insider Trading talking about the likelihood of a Ryan Johansson trade and who and where the destination might be.
When you're not winning, there's bound to be rumors. The Columbus Blue Jackets, 8-14, sitting 29th in the NHL. And Darren, they're getting some interest in Ryan Johansson.
Teams are calling. They're continuing to call on Ryan Johansson. Now, you know, he's softly in play is how one team with interest described Ryan Johansson. So that doesn't mean that Jaromir Kekäläinen, the general manager of the Blue Jackets, is calling teams saying, "What are you going to give me?" However, when teams call, he's not dismissing the interest. He is saying, "Well, what's your offer?" So what that tells you is that there's at least some interest in considering the trade of Ryan Johansson. And as we saw on the weekend, his minutes dropped. He was demoted to the fourth line. So if the right deal comes along, they'll consider it.
Where would you can you see Ryan Johansson ending up?
If you're softly in play, can you then be hardly in play?
It's a matter of, I guess, word speaking.
Can you be hard in play?
Yeah.
Where do I think he ends up?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've actually thought about this a lot, and I can see, you know, you talk about the teams that are listed. To me, it just seems to me that Vancouver is the place he's going to end up. Why? Well, because he's from the area.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have Virtanen and they have McCann and they have, I don't know a lot about Shinkarik, and they have some other prospects, you know, Ben Hutton on the young guy in the back end. They have these pieces.
Bo Horvat's
another guy. I mean, Johansson brings a different kind of play and skill level to that team and a young one and needing to infuse the lineup with skill. Now, it probably will cost them some of those players I just mentioned if they're going to acquire them, but they need somebody to take the reins from the Sedins. And Jim Benning, you know, what's Willie Desjardins and Jim Benning? How are they being perceived by ownership and all that? I don't know. I don't know enough about that. But that seems like a logical spot to me, Vancouver.
Yeah, I could see Vancouver working. Richie, you know, bring in Brandon Sutter to be their second-line center in the trade for Nick Bonino. And, I mean, they have to start thinking about life after the Sedins, right?
The Sedins are under contract
for one more year after this year. Mm-hmm. So I think that would make sense. You know, Richie mentions the ties to BC and the fact that they're a young team. There are certainly many teams that would love to have a Ryan Johansson on their team. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets, not saying that they're going to trade for Ryan Johansson because they obviously are set at center right now, but a team like the Winnipeg Jets would love to have a Ryan Johansson, a guy that had 71 points last year. I mean, there just aren't that many players that have that offensive ability. And I don't think, by the way, that we've seen the best of Ryan Johansson. I think he could get 80, 85 points, maybe even higher. Maybe he gets 90 points. As Rich mentioned, I mean, this is a guy who, mm-hmm. with his combination of size and speed, he's got a great shot, too. It was actually 33 goals 2 years ago. I misspoke. He had a career high in points last year, but it was 33 goals was 2 seasons ago. But, you know, he's under contract, Rich, for 2 more years after this year at, what is it, $3 million a year or something like that?
It's $4 million.
Yeah. $4 million a year. It's pretty good for a guy who
$4 million is the cap hit.
But right. It's actually $4 million. It's only one more year after this year.
$4
million cap. It's $6 million of hard cash.
That number is important because that means the qualifying offer has to be at that $6 million level, or I think 10% higher than that, right?
It's the qualifying. No, it's that's above the threshold. So it has to be that, I believe, commensurate with that value of $6
million. Yeah.
There's no kicker, I don't believe, for the 10% after a certain number, which I think is low. So I think it's just $6 million that they have to qualify him at.
Yeah.
Remember, though, it's only qualifying 1 year.
He's going to get $6 million. I mean, it's not an issue.
And, Drew, even another team, you know, we talked a lot about Calgary when it came to Travis Hamonic. A team like Calgary, who is pretty top-heavy, I mean, they would love to have Ryan Johansson, as their either first or second-line center, right? They have the defenseman to give up.
Well, that's a good point, Ezzy. They do. I mean, but that's going to be T.J. Brody.
It's going to cost you big. It's going to cost you big.
And draft picks.
But, I mean, Ryan Johansson is he's a special player. You're not seeing it this year, but if you're looking at...
He's a special player with an attitude problem, probably, we think.
We think. I mean, you know...
So if you're going to... You're going to have to... I mean, it's going to be like the Jets trade.
Well, here's a quote from Aaron Portsline, who is going to join us coming up next segment to talk more about this. Johansson actually had some health scares in the offseason this year, mm-hmm. and he admits that the summer scare with an elevated heartbeat left him physically unprepared for the start of the season. Here's the quote.
Well, Tortorella came and said he was out of shape.
Yeah. Well, here's the quote from Aaron Portsline in the Blue Jackets Extra blog that he writes on the Columbus Dispatch website. A great blog, great information on the Blue Jackets. Quote, I won't get into details about what was going on, but I definitely wasn't able to be myself, keep my regular schedule. That's something I've been trying to catch up with this season, and I've started to feel really well the last little while. It definitely was hard, especially with all the back-to-back games early in the season, to feel like myself out there, Johansson said, but now I feel like I'm where I want to be. Given that the Blue Jackets know that he had some health concerns at the start of the year, should they have been more sympathetic maybe to his plight and his slow start to the season rather than taking this tough love approach?
Well, I don't know if Todd Richards was or not, but he's not around to talk about it.
But John Tortorella is certainly taking the tough love approach.
But different to come into the season and poor shape and then still be in poor shape 8 to 10 games into the season.
Is it that quick of a turnaround to get your legs under you?
I don't know, Drew. You're new, you know. These guys are young and you get going. When you play a few games, that's all you need. I mean, not maybe one or two, I appreciate, but 8-9 games, and you're out of shape after that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting scenario with this Blue Jackets team and Ryan Johansson. It does seem like it's doomed to fail at some point in time. Even if it doesn't result in the trade, it's hard to believe you're going to see him re-signing there for long term, given all the, you know, back and forth and all the negativity that's going on between management and the player and the player's agent. You know, sort of, it's hard to believe that it doesn't end up with him leaving the team at some point in time. So maybe they're better off trading him nice and early, getting the maximum return on him. But then again, are you selling an asset when he's at
this
when
nice
he's
and
at,
early?
Well,
I don't think it's nice and early.
You don't think it's nice and early?
You're already past early.
You're already, so this yeah. is, they've already waited too long, you're saying?
I think they've waited too long to get, I know the league talks, everybody talks in the league and they know, but any kind of red flags that maybe weren't out there are now out there.
So you're selling them at a lower.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it more with Aaron Portsline coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.